I mention that facetiously. I don't mean it seriously, but I do suggest that the problem is not being sufficiently thought out or coordinated at government level at the moment. And if it were, more could be done.
Well, I would like to take issue with Hinsley there. I think the question of emigration of people is a question for people themselves. It's a matter for the individual. Governments can help. I don't believe in a matter of that kind they can plan satisfactorily. Everything depends on whether the prospective emigrant has got the right attitude towards his new country, whether he's the sort of person who will settle down in it. And nothing, I think, would be more important for Commonwealth as a whole than planned immigration of people who weren't likely to make good emigrants. The suggestion was made at the time when we were planning, and I think myself very usefully planning, building of various satellite towns in this country. But there was no reason why the satellite towns should be in this country. They might as well be in some other part of the Commonwealth. Well, that is excellent in theory, but in practice, people have relatives, they've homes and friends, they are quite prepared to move a certain distance from them, but a great distance, some are willing to move, some are not. Those who are not, I think it's psychologically unwise to move.
I fully agree with Manchester about this, but I'll develop my point about it in a moment.
Well, from an Australian point of view, what do you think about this word?
Well, the difficulty of coordination is tremendous. After World War I, we started a closer settlement plan, which depended on immigration, on attracting from Great Britain, in fact, numbers of people who would settle down on the land in areas that we wanted newly developed. Well, in one state alone, I think my figures are right, the state of Victoria, we did attract by assisted immigration something like 50,000 people and put them in rural areas, only to find that another 50,000 people who had already been in rural areas had gone to the cities. And so that the general net gain, you see, was very little. And this brings me to a point which I think is of great importance at this stage. The real problem of a managed transplantation of people, is that of maintaining a balanced economy, or rather of keeping the distortion of the present economy to the minimum possible while the transfer is going on.
Both in the country that's receiving the new population and in the country that's losing it.
Now, I'd like to refer to what happened, you see, in the United States in the mid-19th century. Great masses of people went. Certainly they were assisted, there were cheap passages and so on, but they were dumped into a country without any provision for housing or security of jobs or anything else. And at the cost of a very great social pain and distress, I should imagine these people were absorbed into factories, they found some sort of housing, but mainly it must have been in the slum areas of the great cities, the great industrial cities. Well, now that is a situation which in Australia we would not only we wouldn't like to see, but we'd actively resist anything of that sort happening in relation to the kind of migration which we hope will take.
Well, I agree with Wood, and I really agree with what Mansur said a little time ago. But it seems to me that it's all very well emphasizing the difficulties, you see, in a good civil service way. But what you're doing, if you let the emphasis of the difficulties deter you from thinking any further, is not facing up to the dilemma.
I think they're a little unfair there.
I'm deliberately being a little unfair. But may I just continue for a moment?
Well, you are succeeding.
There's one basic fact. You see, taking Professor Wood's reference to Australia, to American immigration and movement westwards in the 19th century, one basic fact which we must get into our minds about immigration or migration of any sort among white populations today, compared with white population migrations in the 19th century. And that fact is that any migration that takes place today, or any consideration of whether or not it ought to take place, must be carried out against the background of the fact that you are dealing with stable and diminishing populations. All the 19th century migrations were spillovers from populations which were increasing dynamically and tremendously of their own accord.
Well, then frustrating this argument because we've got tremendously overpopulated people with very acceptable migrants in them. I would instance, Italy, where the spillover is still waiting to take place. But while we're ready to take those migrants and to welcome them. They understand that sort of an environment and so on. We still harbour a preference to people who understand our political and our economic structure.
Well, now, yes, I just want to, if I may, remind you that we've got also to look at this question of migration from Britain to the Commonwealth countries from the British point of view. Now, we've talked about some of the difficulties from the Australian point of view, and I may say they're equally strong in the case of Canada, that is the housing shortage and all the rest, which limits and puts limits on our willingness to accept really large numbers each year. These problems are there. But surely from a British point of view, there are very serious difficulties also. The reference to moving builders to Australia so you could build houses in Australia. How will that be received here in Britain, where the outcry for homes is so great? These problems, let's examine them for a moment.
Well, the problems, of course, are very formidable, because the people whom most of the other countries of the Commonwealth want are the people who are wanted most in this country in these immediate post-war years. Of course, situations change rapidly. The people with high technical qualifications, artisans and so on, who are wanted overseas, are also still greatly needed in this country.
To interject there, that each of these Commonwealth countries which has begun to be anxious to have population has already committed itself to receiving a fair cross-section of the people. Everybody knows that it must be a roughly fair cross-section. Dependence and independence, working and not working, young and old. And the Dominion opinion, I think Wood will agree with this, is to appreciate that problem. They can't just take the best, and they know it. And they're prepared, aren't they, in Canada, to take a cross-section.
Well, we like to think in terms, I'm speaking of Australia, in terms of family units.
Exactly.
Of relatively young family units. But we don't object to taking the older people as well, if they belong to the family
units.
Because they are productive workers in another sense.
But of course, in fact, the older people tend not to emigrate in the same proportion as the younger people for one reason or another. I agree that's by no means an insuperable obstacle, and I also agree with what Hinsley said, that there's much more awareness now of the problem of taking a fair cross-section in the age groups of the population. But another point that arises is still, or another problem that remains, is the problem of the qualifications for people who go. The primary mover in the migration tends to be the technician.
Certainly.
Who is needed at both ends.
Well, I'm very surprised to find, I've been talking in Birmingham particularly to groups of people who are interested, not as a propagandist for immigration, but just to find out what they're doing, what they want to do, and mainly they want not a change of country, but a change of occupation. Mainly they're looking for some change. There's the old sense of adventure, which leads them to suppose that in Australia, for instance, they might find for their children in the future greater security, greater interest, greater adventure.
I wonder now if we could just look for a moment at the political side of this and how it affects the Commonwealth as a whole. What are the political arguments for and against large-scale reallocation of population within the Commonwealth? Mr. Manser?
Well, I think the political and still more the strategic arguments are quite strong. I have used the word, the qualification, quite deliberately. They're not overwhelmingly strong. I think it's a great advantage to the Commonwealth that this country, which is still the most exposed in the Commonwealth in these dangerous times, should be strong in manpower. It is, of course, perfectly true that with a smaller population, we in this island would need to import less foodstuffs. That would be a very important consideration, as we knew from the last war. But as against that, we must have the manpower for munition factories and for the armies, which our armies are now almost on what we used once to think as a continental scale.
May I add something there? On this
I'm not.
On this strategic point, it's certainly true, you see, that we must have some manpower remain. But first of all, in the last war, our actual munitions production was not the main supply of our munitions with which we fought the war. The two things, remember I mentioned earlier that this maldistribution of population within the Commonwealth has been a good thing in the past. Now, strategically speaking, it's been a good thing in the past for the simple reason that Great Britain was able to maintain, despite its growing population at home, a tremendous power of initiative in a war, in the outbreak of a war, and of resilience throughout a war.
Now, that was maintained partly because of the command of the sea and the fleet, partly because of our great industrial strength. Competitively, our industrial strength has gone. Strategically speaking, the development of air power and the atom bomb simply make the problem of our vulnerability so great that we've lost those two things. And it's dangerous for us to go on thinking we've still got this.
There's one problem of vulnerability, too.
Oh, certainly.
But I don't think we ought to forget two points of great importance. You can't simply take people, men or women, out of a country without taking with them or providing for them the equipment with which they'll have to work at the other end, the capital goods.
Certainly.
That's point one. The other point of great importance is that we've been thinking in terms of production and not in terms of distribution, not in terms of the service industries for which a great many women will be wanted.
Mm.
Now we've been talking entirely in terms of men. I think that's a mistake. Mm.
Professor Manser, a final word from you too.
Well, I would like to suggest, I'm sorry I can't develop it, something in the nature of a solution. I agree with the other speaker. I think greater migration from this country to other countries of the Commonwealth has everything to recommend it. To make it possible, from the point of view of this country, I would like to see greater migration from Europe to this country, where the people can be more easily absorbed with our larger population, and then migration onwards of British people here to the Commonwealth countries overseas.
Would you accept that insight?
Well, I wouldn't accept that at all. But I haven't time to develop it. It seems to me that, of course, I have no objection, and neither has Professor Wood, from what he said earlier, to the acceptance of non-Anglo-Saxon races in the Commonwealth or in this country. But I don't believe that it solves the problem at all. I'm glad to hear that Mansell wants some immigration to the Dominion, because I warn him that if he doesn't, they'll just begin to dwindle in their populations in 30 years' time, and there won't be any Commonwealth countries left at all if you're not careful about it.
Well, gentlemen, I think we've had a spirited, lively, by no means complete review of the problem. Obviously, if we had another hour, I think we might be able to go through the list of difficulties and arguments on both sides of the mass-scale migration within the Commonwealth. I think, however, we may have provoked our listeners into thinking a bit for themselves on the thing, too. And I also perhaps interested some of them, Professor Wood, in the prospects of going to your country or to mine.
I hope so.
And if so, I think perhaps the discussion will have been worthwhile. Thank you all, gentlemen, for taking part with me.
You have been listening to a discussion in the weekly series London Forum, recorded in the studio of the BBC. The speakers were F.H. Hinsley, Nicholas Manser, and G.L. Wood, with Robert Mackenzie in the chair. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.